from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report for the 10th day of January 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett will be here to discuss the cash grain market. Along the way, we'll take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast. Mike Tenura will be here from T-Storm Weather, and it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. And oh, don't forget, we'll record Commodity Week today. We'll post that up to the website by about 5 o'clock tonight. Our panelists this week will include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, along with Merrill Crowley of Midwest Market Solutions and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Dan, I want to talk a little bit about the dip in the soybean markets down today. Is there a reason that this market might go down?
Well, as a technician, the first thing that I noticed over the past couple of days, it was starting to show up a little bit earlier this week, is that run that we've had basically for the new year, where we kind of closed higher almost, I think, every day. The market was at a point, when you look at a lot of technical indicators, it was ripe for a setback or a period of consolidation. So I think as a technician, I would say, or I would argue, that it was ready for some kind of pullback after a string of higher closes and a period of consolidation. I think fundamentally, the trade is maybe using that we haven't heard of any kind of finalized China deal. Now, I've seen some articles that the thing is pretty well near, but we haven't heard anything finalized and what they were going to be buying, at least as far as agricultural products. So I think those two things probably kind of came together here and probably got this market settling back a little bit after a pretty good run to the upside.
Yeah, what and when would be important in that process? And if it's next year for soybeans, that would be a big difference than buying nearby. And they are talking about letting go of some restrictions they've had as to some of the GMO corn products, and maybe some corn being moved into the Chinese market as well. So that'll be something to look forward to, but the trade just doesn't know, and we probably won't know until even after the announcements come. We might not know for a while, although those seem to be floating around, and maybe we'll see some details sooner rather than later. So at this point, where do we stand technically in the soybean market?
Well, you still got to call the trend as higher from the lows that we made back there in September. Now, when I look at a chart here, I really would like to see March soybeans not go much deeper than $9 on a correction. I would like to see it kind of, if it's going to go down anymore, we're sitting here about 906, 907 as we record. I would like to see the $9 level kind of hold. If that would hold and we could work off our overbought our overbought technical condition, then the market could kind of regroup and take a run to the upside. But I think overall, technically, at least looking at my cyclicals, it wouldn't surprise me that this market goes into a corrective decline and or maybe a period of softness as we go on into September. I kind of had a high here during January, and then my next low point would be kind of middle part of February. So, and seasonally, that's not terribly uncommon to have a February low. Now, in years in the double lows, when we were needing acres, the market kind of went counter seasonal in February because it was trying to raise the insurance guarantee for producers. And so it was trying to encourage farmers to add acres or increase acres during that time. Now that we're in a period of actually surplus inventories, it would be correct in a way that the fundamental market, the fundamentals would say, we don't need you to plant as many corn and soybean acres as you did last year. So maybe we get into a period of softness, and then that would maybe lower the insurance guarantee to kind of push acres out of production. Now, that's just, I'm just speculating and trying to visualize, you know, what the next 30 days may look like. But that would be a reason, and then the market would firm up sometime middle February, and then maybe gain traction, and then we have a rally as we go on into the spring months. We usually get a period of strength just prior to planting because of there's uncertainty of, you know, weather conditions and what kind of acreage mix we're going to have and that kind of stuff. And, of course, that may also have to do with what could be going on in South America at that point in time, too.
And when you look forward, USDA eventually will release some final numbers for the crop production figures and update the world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Many have thought that those might be supportive, in particular for the corn market. Can you make the case with what you've laid out that corn will follow those seasonal patterns you've discussed?
Yeah, when you look at corn, we got some nice technical formations to go higher, but I don't know. I mean, as the trade has been talking, that they thought maybe the January crop report would be generally supportive to, I think, both corn and soybeans. I think everybody was kind of anticipating maybe the yield numbers coming down a little bit. But you don't know, USDA could have changed the acres. We'll all find that out at some point in time. But I think for the most part, that's kind of already worked into the market. I mean, when the trade starts talking about a particular thing, whether it's declining acres or increasing acres or yields aren't holding up to expectations, that's usually priced into the market. And what USDA reports generally do is just kind of confirm what the trade has kind of been talking about. As a pure technician, I find it kind of interesting here. I know everybody's kind of lost with USDA reports being absent every day. We always got some kind of report coming out every day. I think we got way too many reports to start with, so, but that's just my personal opinion. But in theory, that's what technical analysis is all about, is that all of the fundamentals is actually put into the price structure on any given day, because all the buyers and sellers are agreeing that is where they will buy or sell at based upon what they know in the market. And that's coming from around the world. So I think the market action is actually already have plugged in a lot of the fundamentals. Now, when you get into government reports where you really have the big wide swings is when USDA's support is a major surprise. And that is when you get a quick reaction. But I think over time, the market would probably reflect USDA's report, but it wouldn't necessarily have the violence to it. So I think USDA reports may have a tendency to maybe create violence in the marketplace, because that's when they give the market a surprise. But I think over time, if you did away with USDA reports, the market action would actually tell you that supplies are greater than what people are thinking, or supplies are smaller than what people actually think.
Yeah. On that note, CONAB, which is Brazil's version of the United States Department of Agriculture, and USDA says that they do a pretty good job of getting their numbers in order, did release their set of numbers for production in that country this morning. And it showed soybeans at 118.8 million metric tons. That's down only 1.3 million metric tons. A lot of numbers have been bandied around, and most of them have been higher or lower than that number for their soybeans. So that's probably one of the reasons the market was a bit lower or went lower for the day. Their corn on first crop only was up 0.09 million metric tons. They're saying 91.19, although the second crop corn is the larger of their two, and there wasn't really any change in their yield there. So, well, and we won't know because that one's not been put in the ground yet. So lots of things that are working through this marketplace and are always interesting to talk to you about, I know. Thanks for being with us today, and we do appreciate it.
Very well, Todd.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, U.S. officials said yesterday that China has pledged to purchase a substantial amount of U.S. agriculture, energy, and other manufactured products just one day after Beijing gave five genetically modified crops, or GM, the green light for import. Many market participants see China's new GM approvals, which include both corn and soybeans, Reuters reports, as one more step towards finally ramping up purchases of U.S. grains and oilseeds. But others have doubts as to whether this is truly the plan and if it will make any difference for the U.S. export program. Ever since the two countries' leaders agreed more than a month ago to work toward resolving their trade issues, the market has been watching, especially for China, to resume buying U.S. soybeans, but there's been an expectation that corn would also be included. The corn purchases have yet to be realized, but China booked 2.8 million tons of U.S. soybeans mid-last month. Traders reported on Monday that the Chinese bought an additional 180,000 tons, though there was some talk that the haul may have been as much as 900,000 tons. Without USDA to confirm or deny any potential sales, traders appear to be choosing the optimistic route even in the face of record U.S. soybean stockpiles. Speaking of stockpiles, as we just discussed with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting, CONAB from Brazil has released some production estimates. It's pegged soybeans at 118.8 million metric tons. That for this year is down 1.3 million metric tons from the previous estimates. Corn estimate at 91.19 is up 0.09 million metric ton. The change is all in the first crop. The first crop corn harvest is expected to be a 27.46 million metric ton crop. The second crop at 63.73 million metric tons. The primary changes came in yield and not in area. Well, let's move now to Washington, D.C. You know, the U.S. government last year collected some $6.7 billion more in customs duties in fiscal 2018 than in the previous fiscal year. This according to the Treasury Department's final monthly statement for fiscal 2018. This is the net result of the trade policies put forth by the Trump administration. The data from the Treasury Department, of course, does not include the offsets, for instance, the $12 billion aid plan for farmers through the market facilitations program. We call that the MFP. And further, economists say the extra revenue isn't actually paid by foreign governments at all, but rather by American companies importing those products into the United States. Still, the tally is $6.7 billion higher than it was in the previous year. Staying in Washington, D.C., and with the Trump administration for the moment, President Donald Trump Wednesday formally nominated Andrew Wheeler to head the Environmental Protection Agency. Wheeler, who assumed the role of acting EPA administrator following the registration of Scott Pruitt, has done, quote, a fantastic job, according to Trump. The nomination will be considered by the Senate, which narrowly confirmed Wheeler as EPA deputy administrator by a vote of 53-45. Bloomberg News calls Wheeler a politically savvy former energy lobbyist and Republican Senate aide who shares Trump's approach to environmental regulation. And finally today, speaking to the president, he will address the nation's farmers at the American Farm Bureau Federation's 100th annual convention in New Orleans on this coming Monday. Louisiana Farm Bureau President Ronnie Anderson says the news was quite a surprise.
We thought that Vice President Pence was coming to address the group on Sunday, but that was news to us about Trump coming, and it's a good time for him to be here. With the problems with the trade negotiations and the border wall and labor and everything else going on, it's an ideal time for him to address the farmers of this country over all these issues.
This will be the second year in a row that President Trump has attended the American Farm Bureau Federation's convention. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media's Public Radio for the Farming World. Next week, I'll be on the road, and hopefully you'll be able to catch up with me at one of these meetings. On Monday evening, the 14th, I'll be in Albion, Illinois, that at the Edwards County Fairgrounds, starting at 6 o'clock for supper, and then we'll have a Will Ag marketing panel that includes Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities, and Mike Zuzlo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, along with Todd Hubbs. That one's sponsored by the folks at Country Financial and Ron Gray. Again, that's at 6 o'clock at the Edwards County Fairground there in Albion, Illinois, on Monday night. I'll make a trip then from there to the north, all the way up to Highland, actually to Freeport, to the Highland Community College Conference Center for the Northwest Illinois Agronomy Summit. Now, that starts at 8 a.m. for registration there. I won't be there that early, but we'll catch up with you. If you're interested, you can always just show up at the Highland Community College Conference Center in Freeport for the Northwest Illinois Agronomy Summit on Tuesday next week. And then Wednesday, I'll come back here home and be in Mahomet on Wednesday morning for a Farm Credit Illinois event. That starts at 8:30 a.m., and you can take a look at the Farm Credit Illinois website for all the details. We'll have a Will Ag panel there. We'll talk about the markets there, and Jonathan Kappas will be with us, too, to take up the latest in ag policy. And then on Wednesday evening, I'll be in Taylorville at the University of Illinois Extension Building. That's in Christian County, along with Merrill Crowley of Midwest Market Solutions. Kurt Kimmel will join us again from Bates Commodities, and Paul Georgie from Allendale will be there. That's on Wednesday evening in Taylorville. Find all the details online at willag.org. Now let's talk about the cash grain market. We're joined by Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. What do you see?
Well, I think a couple of things, but probably the most notable is that, soybeans came up on some decent resistance and essentially couldn't bust through. And so I think, you're looking at a lot of people who looked at that as, hey, you know what, maybe I don't want to be too excited about owning beans up here at the top end of the range and dumping some of the longs that they've made some money on here in the last several days, especially since the first of the year. And I think that's what kind of got the ball rolling.
Anything in the next week that you think will be problematic for the soybeans?
Well, we just got to find out if there's any meat to all this talk out of the U.S. and Chinese situation. Obviously, we've got, weather issues in Brazil we're keeping an eye on. But, Brazilians got enough water to get them past the major issues they were having. Are they going to get follow-up rain or not? I think the weather is going to be closely watched, but everything's going to be trumped, if you will, by what's going on with the U.S. and Chinese trade negotiations.
In the United States, have you been watching cash bases across the Midwest, and does it tell us anything about the flow of grain?
Well, it sure does appear that we've got exports in a little better situation than what they were. We've seen your export markets, some of the river basis levels have been decent on the cash, especially for this time of year. I would like to think that as we move forward in the marketing year, we're going to see even better basis situations, especially with regards to corn versus soybeans. I think that movement's been pretty robust, and I do think that as we move along, if the demand stays intact, I don't think there's any question that you're going to at least see basis get better. As far as futures is concerned, we got a lot to learn between now and then, but I'm not bearish corn by any means.
During the 2018 season, you were consistently of the mind that producers should sell sooner rather than later. What about for the 2019 growing season for corn and soybeans?
Well, for the time being, I'm a little more hesitant. Our first price point on corn was 406 for Dece, and then with soybeans, we've got more on the books than what we do with corn. Our first price point on soybeans was 960. And so, looking at the way this market's unfolded, I'm not so sure that 35%, which is where a lot of guys that we do business with are at, might want to do more if we get back above 960, 970. I don't know that $10 is realistic at this point. I think technically people are looking at charts and saying that 1015 to 1020 area is possible. But I'm going to look closer at my profit margins than just a simple price. And I'm not so sure with the fundamentals in the bean market, I can get terribly friendly right now.
Okay, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois. When we come back, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this 10th day of January. Mike Tenura is here. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Let's begin in South America. Brazil's CONAB came out with some numbers this morning that show not as much of a hit, at least yet, to their soybean crop as many had expected, though it's still really sporadic as to the dryness and the wetness. Can you tell me a bit about where they stand today?
The interesting thing about Brazil is that you can divide their growing regions into three separate regions. You have a northern part, a central part, and a southern part. And they all planted slightly different times of the year. And because of that, the impact of weather varies just a little bit. So part of the reason for the yield losses in Brazil that CONAB is discussing are due to the dryness in the southern areas. That crop was mostly planted in October and into November. And we did have a pretty big dry patch starting up around December 1st, and it's basically continued until about 5 days ago when it started to rain again. So that's part of the reason for that yield loss. As you head to the north, there's an equal number of soybeans grown in that region as well. They have not been dry until the last 2 to 3 weeks, so their dryness problems essentially began around December 18th and have continued until today. In fact, as of Tuesday morning, around 95% of soybean production in the central and northern areas were drier than normal over the last 30 days. And that accounts for about 55% of their soybean production. So we're not talking about a small amount here. Now, again, it gets a little tricky because that region is divided into a fairly early planted soybean crop and also a fairly late planted soybean crop. So depending on exactly when the crop was filling or is about to start flowering, that tells you how this weather is affecting. But it's really hard to put it all together because, again, of the way they plant at these different times of the year. So that means the same weather is affecting the same crop in different ways.
And going forward, what do you see across those regions in the next week?
Well, the central and northern areas will see isolated to scattered thunderstorms. But you have to remember that about 2 to 2.5 inches of rain is normal every week in January. So even though we will see some thunderstorms here and there, it's unlikely that we'll see anywhere near that much. So basically staying pretty dry in those driest areas. As we head to the south, the coverage of dryness diminished fairly rapidly over the last week. And that's because we saw some decent rains last Friday and then every couple of days, including today. So that's starting to drop that dryness in the south. Basically, it looks like the same thing is going to continue as we move forward. Driest areas stay pretty dry, and the wetter areas stay about the same with some rains here and there.
And what are conditions in Argentina?
Well, they're very wet, and unfortunately, it looks like they're going to stay very wet. We're looking for rainfall on the order of 4 to 8 inches in the northern growing regions, to 3 to 6 inches in the central areas, and then 1 to 3 inches south. Over the next 2 weeks, normal rainfall is only around 2 to 2.5 inches. So these are some real big numbers. And if you just isolate out the soybean crop, as of Tuesday morning, 26% of that crop had already received at least twice its normal rainfall over the last 30 days. It's rained over the last 2 days since we ran our analysis, and there's a lot more rain coming up, as we just discussed. So there can be a pretty strong argument for too much rain in Argentina. We're going to have to watch that as well as Brazil as we move forward over the next couple of weeks.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.